Hello, everyone. This is Anke Menzler, your host for Breakthrough the Glass Ceiling. Our special guest today is Dr. Carol Parker Walsh, and we'll be talking about the pivotal time in a woman's life and career. And, important topic, the sunk cost fallacy, and it's important to your career. But before we dive in with her, let me introduce her quickly. Dr. Carol Parker Walsh is the founder of the, I love that, Career Rebel Academy. It's for high-achieving women at midlife, ready to showcase their brilliance in design and epic career and life they love. She's an award-winning certified career and personal brand strategist, life and executive coach, a TEDx presenter, author, international keynote, and member of Forbes Coaches Council and Newsweek Expert Forum, and local career expert on AM Northwest Morning Show. She's a catalyst for transformational growth, confidence, and career life alignment. Carol leverages her JD and PhD and multiple certifications along with her experience as an attorney, executive leadership, and training in psychology and organizational systems to help successful driven female professionals and entrepreneurs elevate their income and amplify their confidence, expertise, and authority to do the meaningful work they are meant to do in the world without sacrificing their years of success. And now, drums, please. Carol, welcome to Breakthrough the Glass Ceiling. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you. I am excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, this is so amazing having you. And we have so important topics today, and I'm so happy to talk with you about it. But before we get into all of that, please share a bit about yourself, about your story, how you get into, or yeah, how come you got into the coaching, and especially also women in midlife.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I, you know, as you read a moment ago about my bio, I have had a long career, a 30-year career in the employment space in one way or the other. And it wasn't until I had a massive car accident around the time I was in my mid-40s. And it up until that time, I had always been one of those people who never felt like I quite fit in the career that I was in. Like I was in doing this work. I was an attorney and I was in academia, and nothing ever quite felt like it fit. But, you know, I did what every dutiful person does. You go to school, you get the degree, you go for the income and the salary and the great job. And somewhere around my mid-40s, I was in a massive near fatal car accident. And I remember at the time I was coming up a two-lane road, and a drunk driver was actually approaching me. And I heard a voice as soon as it said, turn now. It was like the voice was sitting right next to me. And at the time, I didn't know where to turn because it was a two-lane road. And on one side, I would have fallen off, you know, driven off the side of the cliff, really. Ooh. And the other side was oncoming traffic. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure what to do, but I knew I had to do something because the lights were coming at me. And so I made the turn. And even though I got hit and I had some recovery from it, I'm alive because had I been hit head on, I wouldn't be here. But I tell that story because what resonated with me every day after that accident was that voice that said, turn now. Oh. And it dawned on me that it had been a voice that I had been hearing for years, that this isn't right. You don't really want to do this. Don't accept that promotion. And, you know, like, why are you going this direction? Like all these little whispers and doubts you hear in your mind, but you just go along with it because it's a great title and salary and everyone is cheering you on to do that work. And what I realize is that when you reach a certain level of success, it's really hard to walk away from it. And even though you're hearing that voice that says, turn now, you think about the options to the left and right, you know, they don't seem overly optimistic. You know, it's like, do I walk away and go into poverty? Or do I, you know, like, what do I do? Because the options never seem quite clear.
Yeah.
So what we do instead is that we stay the course. And what I know for me that day is, had I stayed the course, I would have died physically. But I think what we do when we just stay the course is that somewhere in us, we die emotionally or spiritually, or, you know, we get burnt out, we get frustrated, we get overwhelmed, we get sick, we get ill, we're just unhappy. And we're not quite sure why that is, but it's usually because we're staying the course when really we're not listening to the voice that says turn. So after I went through that process and really went through this deep dive and self-discovery process for myself, I knew I had to help other women, because I wish at that time there was somebody like me who said, hey, I know exactly what you're going through. I can help you navigate the process. And so that's why I decided to do this work and to become a coach and to help other women who were at midlife, who had, you know, children who were prepping for college, who had aging, you know, a parents, who had hefty 401k plans, who, you know, had great salaries and income, who had pretty been well established in their life and careers and felt too stuck to be able to make a move. And I knew that because the midlife time is such a interesting and challenging pivotal time of our lives, that to navigate any kind of change in our careers, it had to be done in the right way that honored all of that, but allowed you to find the confidence and courage to move forward. So that really is what catapulted me to really do this work that I do, and why I love it so deeply and so honored and proud to work with the women that I work with.
Oh, wow. I have goosebumps all over my body. Thank you for sharing that. And I so know where you have been, and I just feel it. It's the truth. I just can't, oh my gosh, I cannot say how much this touched me. And I think it will touch a lot of people hearing this, because what you hear, and especially the time, and this time happens to every one of us, it's called midlife. This is a special moment, and we get also, and that's what you just said is, you don't know where to go, and you don't want to leave everything that you have gained and reached and all the accolades and all of that. You don't want to leave that behind, right? But there's still this fear, and everyone is projecting the fear into your future as well. So, oh my gosh, yes. But before we go all over the place, what makes it so important or special for us women? What do you think makes the midlife for us women special?
Yeah, I think for women particularly, what happens is we lose our identity. And, you know, if you are a mom, a wife, you know, and in a career, you've lost a lot of your own personal identity in terms of really who you are, what you want. You've sacrificed a lot in order to get the career you have. So you've created a professional persona. And if you're a mom, you have your mom persona. If you're a spouse or a partner, you know, you have that persona. And so you lose really who you are. You lose your voice. You lose your perspective. You lose your own dreams. Because as women, we tend to sacrifice for the greater good of everyone else around us and leave ourselves last. And so at midlife, after we have done that for so many years, we're right in the middle of being, you know, the young, youthful, carefree person and the aging adult that, you know, usually for our parents' age, who we'd be taking care of right now. And society doesn't really give us a lot of space and even support or encouragement to be able to find our own voice and to do our own thing. And so I think for women in particular, and particularly at midlife, is that we've just lost a sense of ourselves, and we've been so used to sacrificing and being the sacrificial lamb that when it comes to this time in our life, you know, we're really lost and we're not quite sure what to do, where to go. It feels irresponsible to look to focus on ourselves, to prioritize ourselves. It feels selfish. We feel guilty. We feel, you know, there's sometimes we think, well, our time has passed, and so now it's for the next generation, and let me just kind of hang in there until retirement. Like, you know, what? Like, Like, that's not still 20 years away from for a lot of us. So I think that's really what I have seen, is that it's this kind of settling for good enough. You know, I have a good enough job, I have a good enough salary, so I'm okay. And if we have any other things around us, we sacrifice for them, and we don't even know what we want anymore. I mean, when women come to me, one of the first things they usually say is, I have no idea what I want. And if when I ask them who they are, they honestly don't have any idea of who they really are. They know who they are in their profession. Like, they'll say their profession and they know that identity, yeah. But their own identity, their values, what's important to them, what's meaningful to them, you know, their own dreams and desires and vision and goals, they really haven't done any work to even discover what those are anymore, because they figured, you know, I'm in a great job, I'm successful, and isn't that what I should be going after? Isn't that enough? And that's what happens, is that we primarily settle for good enough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. You have touched so many topics in here, and I really love that you were talking about the sacrificing thing and these personas that we create. And I wished I knew you 10 years ago. Honestly, it is exactly that moment when I woke up. It was when I woke up recognizing, oh my gosh, I'm watching my own life. You know, it's just you are not within your life. And what you just said is, we sacrifice so much. We just tend to automatically create personas. And for the sake of a career, we leave our life behind, or for the sake of children, we leave our success behind, and we think we can't have all of that, and we feel guilty. Yes, we sacrifice. Yes. And a powerful word within was the sacrificing lamb. It was really as if we are going to be at the butcher at any time. I don't know. It's just really our walk to the butcher and getting slaughtered. And oh my gosh, it's exactly this. And then we settle for something and mm-hmm. think we can sacrifice our rest of the life, which is a lot of time when we
a
get
a lot of into, time.
Yes. And we sacrifice this to the next generations then again. So how can we do this?
Yeah. So I think honestly, I think women, we just have this high tolerance for struggle. You know, we are used to, again, just not putting ourselves forward. And I just think societally, you know, has taught women that that's what we're supposed to do. We're the nurturers and caregivers of everyone else but ourselves. And it's okay if we sacrifice, that somehow or other this martyrdom is a good thing, as opposed to, well, you know, we don't have to sacrifice who we are. We can mm-hmm. absolutely love our families and love our children and love what we do and love ourselves. And that's quite okay for us to be able to do. And so we have to start giving ourselves permission to say that we have to prioritize ourselves first. You know, someone said once, I read this or someone told me this, but I it's always stuck with me, is that what we need to learn how to do is to give from the saucer and not the cup, mm-hmm. right? So the analogy was like a teacup on a saucer, that we have to make sure that the cup is filled, that's us. Yeah. And then out of the overflow of that, what goes into the saucer is what we give to everybody else. Because mm-hmm. if the cup is empty, we have nothing else to give. And that's why we have high levels of burnout and stress and things of that nature. And so we have to kind of shift it around and stop giving out of the cup and fill the cup up for ourselves, and let everyone else have what's in the saucer.
mm-hmm. Oh, you come to another important topic, which is filling yourself up. So it's about the inner and the outer game. So what do you really mean by the saucer? If anyone listens to this and now just thinks about, how do I fill up this, or how do I give something to others if I'm not filled? And so really maybe going a bit deeper into what that means and how to get out or in.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's a great question. you know, for me, the inner game, which is what you need to do to fill the cup, are the things that we have to do around our mindset, around really learning how to love ourselves, how to provide self-care to ourselves. That means spending time getting to know who we are, knowing what our values are, making sure that what we do is aligned to those values, you know, by asking ourselves some really basic questions about what do I want? What do I dream? What do I want to be? What do I want to do? What do I want to have? Mm-hmm. How do I want to live my life? And spending time constantly, not only fostering those dreams and those values and those ideals, but finding ways to constantly support those things. That's what I mean by filling the cup, mm-hmm. right? That's the inner game. That's where we take care of ourselves. And if we're doing that, everything that we do, if as we're building ourselves up, as we're getting greater confidence and feeling more courageous and brave, as we feel stronger and more capable in our own voice, in our own brilliance, in our own gifts, then out of that, everything else just pours out. And of course, the people around us are going to benefit from that. If we feel amazing, imagine the energy we're going to exude and the light we're going to shine that's going to help other people. And that's the overflow that people can really get. And that's what they're going to vibe off of, is that when we're standing strong, then they have the opportunity to actually benefit from us being strong. And that's the outer game. The overflow of the saucer is the outer stuff that we put out there. That's where we do the work, where we're giving back, where we're changing lives, where we're doing the meaningful work. And it comes once we have that solid full cup and that full core.
Oh, yes. Oh, amazing. Oh, yes. And you didn't mention just take a bath, just get a nice care, just get the nice dress or anything like that in terms of self-care. You also mentioned really diving into what are your values and what do you want to live for? And a lot of people now, coming back to what you mentioned in the beginning, was, okay, what do you do there? Why do you give this all up? It's really feeding your inner strengths. Yes. And this is where we get to the core of us, strengthening this again and bringing what you just said, the brilliance out of us into the world, do meaningful work. Even though if you stay in your job, the job that was at the beginning maybe not the fulfilling one, if you fill up your cup, then hey, you might get some turns in it and you might bring something into it that is totally different. Yes, and you will radiate this out. That's a ripple effect.
Absolutely. You know, and I know, you know, people do get uncomfortable when you achieve something and you're in a great position and a great role. You know, people do get nervous when you decide that that's not what you want to do, particularly when you say you want to do something completely different, or you walk away from it not knowing what you want to do. And I know people mm-hmm. have done that. But I always say people can't see beyond their own limitations mm-hmm. and their own fear. And so when they're limited, when they can't see it being possible for themselves, they can absolutely not see it being possible for you. And so it's really important that you find yourself, like what you're doing here, find places and people and of support who can help you and encourage you to be able to listen to those voices inside of yourself, to listen to your own tuition and to listen to your own wisdom. Because if you get around the wrong people, they'll keep you trapped in a way that only makes them comfortable, but really doesn't help you in what you really want to do. So, you know, and I know that's a hard thing. Trust me, I got everyone, when I decided not to be a lawyer anymore, everyone was like, what? Like, what's wrong with you?
Why would you give this up?
Right. And for a long time, I know, you know, we talked about sunk cost fallacy for a long time. You know, I stayed in that profession for that very reason. I mean, the sunk cost fallacy, which is, you know, comes out of actually economics, is this idea that you put so much into something that mm-hmm. you can't, that you have to keep going no matter what. No matter what the return on investment is, no matter what, how bad it is, you've already put in, you already invested too much. So you got to stay the course. Mm-hmm. And when I, you know, I stayed as a lawyer longer than I should have, because I had all those law school loans and I went to school for 3 more years and I studied for the bar and all of that stuff that I did to become a lawyer. I felt like I couldn't possibly walk away from it. It would be like throwing it all away, not realizing that I never threw away my law degree or even my years of law. I just was able to leverage that work into doing so much better work, more powerful work. Yeah. I'm able to help women. I'm able to talk to them about what I understand about the law and help them to think about contracts, to think about salary negotiation, and to think about, you know, organizational dynamics, and to think about promotion opportunities or unfair treatment in the workplace. I mean, I bring all of that to be able to support my clients and what I do now. So I never threw that away. I just learned how to leverage it in a different way. And that's what we have to think, that everything that we invested, you are not throwing it away if you decide to do something different. You're just doing it slightly different. That's all.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, yeah, yeah.
What comes to my mind is this picture of a farmer who's cutting down a rotten or a dry apple tree, you know, to just leverage the fruitful soil, yes, to grow different trees. And then you can, of course, do something different. Maybe there is another apple tree on it, or maybe it's a cherry tree or whatever comes out of that, really.
Yes.
They don't think about, oh, but I have invested, or my family invested 20 or 30, 40 years into that tree. It's just, no, you know, I have so much farmland here. I would be stupid if I would risk losing all of that soil for just one rotten tree. That's hello. Why can't we think of that like
that's
that?
A great analogy. That is such a great analogy, because we are the fertile ground. So you know, we are still filled with all of those nutrients and all of everything that we need to grow an imaginary, unimaginable amount of possibilities from ourselves. And we're not selling the land. We're just like moving that tree so we can grow some other new stuff. So that's such a great analogy. I love that.
Yes. Love my gosh. It was just seeing, okay, you have to cut this down. It's nothing that you have invested in that. And now it's time to do another investment into yourself. That's good. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I love that. And we have talked about this now in terms of sunk cost fallacy, but what you have also mentioned was in terms of society, how that plays a role in all of that. And I know that you have done a lot of research. Would you share a bit of about all of that, how we don't have, I don't know, it's maybe not the permission, but it feels like we don't have permission to be really courageous. It's like everyone cuts us down. But you have done a lot of research about all of that. So would you share something with us about
that? Yeah. In my, you know, the work that I've done, you know, over the years, and also with the women that I've worked with, a lot of it is either come societally or from family or from culture, you know, that there's these messages that, you know, we have received about, and particularly when we are one of a few or the only one maybe in our families or in our areas who have reached a level of success or achievement, there's a lot of pressure on staying the course of representing the family, of the sacrifice that everyone has made to allow you to be where you are now, you know. So there's, it could come from one of three places, like I said, society, family, or culture, that really keeps women trapped in following the status quo and not walking away from it. And so that's really, really hard to leave something like that when you feel the weight of that responsibility. Or you have these messages or these narratives that you grew up with or that were constantly fed to you, that once you get this, that you need to be grateful, that you can't turn away from it, that you need to stay there, that you're setting the example for everyone else. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. And so I could really understand that. I really understand that. And so that's usually the thing that keeps a lot of women trapped and afraid to, you know, really walk away or to make a move from it and to just think, well, let me just satisfy, again, everyone else around me before I actually step out into something else. And just generally, you know, women, I mean, we've made a lot of strides over the years. But if you think about it, it's not a lot of years. It's only been within our lifetime, if you really think of it, a lot of the strides that we were able to have. I mean, it wasn't until, at least in, I know in the United States, it wasn't until the 70s until a woman could like own her own home or get a credit card in her name, or, you know, be able to be seen as a viable candidate for a position. And in some industries, women still are looked upon as not being a viable leader or somebody to step into, you know, positions of power and significance. So, I mean, you think about it, we've made a lot of strides, but society has always placed women in a box. And so to really push ourselves out of it and to own our power and own our significance and own our authority, it does take a little bit of rebelliousness to be able to say that, no, I am worth it. I am going to push myself forward. That's part of the reason too, I work with women at midlife, because they grew up at a time, or at least grew up with parents who definitely grew up in a time where they didn't have a lot of opportunity. And so there's a lot of pressure from either family or culture or society that makes them feel this push-pull between responsibility and desire. Yeah. And that is the rub that usually one or the other wins. And it almost feels sacrificial if you step out against that. So, you know, so that's over the, you know, and it's why the inner game, the mindset work and getting the strength and the courage and the confidence, why working in that piece of it is so critical, because it's not just as simple as, oh, I'll just go out and get something different, or I'll just go out and try something new. People don't realize for women at midlife, there is a lot of undoing, deconstructing that has to happen in their mindset, in their psyche, in their own confidence, in their own self-worth, in order to actually make those kind of moves and changes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. I just, when you were talking about being the only one and all of that, I just saw my mom telling me, oh, go to university. And then I made it. And of course, I sacrificed a lot to that. And it was just repeating my history. And I felt like, oh, yes, okay, I know that. It's just exactly where you are, right? Because they feel so proud of you. And hey, you have to go there and you listen to all of them. That's clear. I know why you do that.
Yeah.
But at a certain level of time, and you just said, lifetime, you only have so much of a lifetime. You should be thinking about who you sacrifice it to, or what you sacrifice it to, instead of just really enjoying all the time and really making something that fills up your cup, your heart. And oh my gosh, yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, my mother, you know, God rest her soul, when I went to college, my mother thought the only purpose for me going to college was to find a husband.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There you go.
That was her, you know, when I talked to her about majors and what I should major in or be, and she thought it really didn't matter. It was to really, like, her greatest desire for me was to find a good man who could take care of me for the rest of my life. And that was the messaging that I got from my mother growing up. You know, my father, which I loved, I think, you know, was a feminist before his time, always told myself and my sisters not to depend on a man, and you could do whatever you want. You can be whoever you want, and you go to college and get that. So I had these two narratives playing in my head.
But
that was all my mother knew, and that's what she was taught, and so that's what she was trying to teach her young girls. But luckily, thank God for my father, because I don't know where I would be if I didn't have him in my other ear saying, "You do whatever it is that you want to do."
Yes. Oh my gosh. Maybe he was the one who told you turn.
Yeah,
it's just this voice. Sometimes you have to listen to the maybe subtle tone within.
Yeah.
It's just my gosh, that's so amazing. You do so incredible work for all the women out there, and I know that a lot of those people who come to you are stuck in their career. So, and I know that you have a process for that to get them unstuck. Would you love to share something about that? Because I think a lot of people would die to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, for me, I've been able to, you know, after all of my research and all of the work that I've done over the years, have been able to kind of really cement it down to three key things. And I call it my triple A framework. And it's three A's because I love, you know, things that rhyme or match. So it makes it easier for me to remember. But the first step is what I call ascertain. And this really is the discovery phase. This is really you taking the time to ask some of the initial questions that I mentioned earlier, just really to do that deep dive, to reconnect to who you are, to rediscover your true identity outside of your professional persona, but who you really are, what you really value, and what you really want in your life, you know, and really understanding what that is and really reconnecting to that. And then once you do that, the second piece of it is what I call amplify. And amplify is that once you understand who you are and what you want, now it's time for you to build that confidence and to position yourself in the world and in your industry and your organization to let people know this is what I'm about, this is what I want, and to solicit that support and feedback to, you know, that community that I talk about, reaching out to people who can really support you to be able to step into that next iteration that you feel is right for you. And then the final phase is activate. And that's really creating the strategic plan to be able to implement and to not only go into those steps, but to also, and this is the key part of this, it's also a recalibration aspect as well, because what I believe very strongly is that through the lifespan, our interests change. And you know, what you did at 20, you don't want to do at 40. And so what you're doing at 40, 45, or 50, 10 years from now, or even 5 years from now, you may decide that you want to do something different. So for me, the activation phase is gaining the tools that you need to really systematize the process so that when you find yourself in a situation that doesn't jive with you, or if something changes in your life, or you decide to move, or you know, you meet someone, or whatever the case, whatever, you know, comes up in your life, that you are equipped to be able to make the shift and make the move again without it being traumatic or trying, because you've always stayed true to who you are. Everything you're doing is aligned to your values, aligned to what's right for you in your life. And so you're able to make these pivots and shifts for the rest of your life, so it's not so taxing for you later on. So those are, like, to me, the three core things that I work with my clients on to help them to know how to face these challenges when they come up again and again and again, because that's life. Things happen in life, and you want to always be prepared and equipped to do the things that are best for you, best for your life, and best for, you know, the things that are important to you.
Yes, amen. Exactly this. And what I really, really love about that is, first off, you are very strategic on that, and women can be strategic on that. And the second thing that I just took out of all of that is if you prepare for all of that, so really going through all those three phases, you are able to make decisions
Yes.
faster. That's
Yes.
exactly it. So, hey, people out there, if you listen, then dive into it. You are able to make decisions faster, and that's where you get all the success out. That's where you gain something out of your life. And oh my gosh,
Yes.
yes,
Yes.
absolutely. That's it.
Absolutely.
So if you're slow at decisions, hello, Dr. Carol Parker Warhol here. Loved it. Thank you so much for sharing all of that, Carol. It's been
Oh, it's my pleasure.
amazing. Oh my gosh. And for all of the listeners who wanted to stay in touch with you, I know you have an incredible gift. Also incredible, I think. So would you mind sharing this with us? So what is it, and what do they get from you?
Yeah, so I put together a little guide called 4 Steps to, you know, Jumpstart Your Career Change in Midlife. And so what I walk you through a lot of the things that we've been talking about today. It's giving you some great questions to think about. It's talking about what the stages look like for you, what you should be thinking about as you move through this process of reconnecting to who you are and what you want so that you can do the fulfilling and meaningful work in the world that you want to do. Yeah. So it's a great little guide. You know, I think all of my doctoral work, I tend to create documents that probably over deliver or give you a lot of good content that could really be helpful for you. So it, you know, it's giving you things to do to actually do it. So it's really concrete action steps that you can take. And so that's what I'm giving to your listeners is an opportunity to get that guide and to work through that.
Thank you so much. That's amazing. And hey, if you know more, if you need more strategy, go in and grab that free gift. We'll be sharing a link below so everyone can just click on it and grab it. So yeah, thank you so much, Carol, for being our special guest and sharing all of that with us. I love it.
Thank you for having me. I love this work and I'm honored to be able to be here and to share. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Now, to our listeners, more sessions will be delivered to you tomorrow. So I look forward to joining you tomorrow. And until then, don't forget that changes need chances. So give yourself a chance to rise into your power and embody your true self. It's your time to shine.